Charlie, thank you so much for joining us and thanks for making the journey. So you are on Quiddity Property Education Podcast. You are here because we already use quite a bit of your employer's bridging finance, and we're going to reveal it because you're here, you made the journey. So it's Glenhawk. So we've been using Glenhawk for quite a while now, and our broker has got a good relationship with Glenhawk. And in fact, you've just said, you know, we got Mukesh here after you, who's just completed another block of flats. He's been on the mentorship with me, he's bought his block, and he's here to talk about it, or gloat about it, I should say.
Yeah.
so thank you for taking the time to come here and give us some. So we've got a few questions that people have asked, but also we do a course as well as social media. I've got 25,000 followers, and they ask questions around, particularly around bridging. And I have to confess, I've been doing this for 25 years, maybe 15 out of the 25, I didn't like bridging. And I have to say, the reason why I didn't like bridging is because I didn't understand it well enough. I got scared of it. And I fear, and I feel, and I know that people say the same thing right now. If they don't know and understand it, it's quite scary to hear 1% a month, 12% a year annually at the moment. But over time, I was saying to Richard just now that actually I realized that not bridging and I'm buying cash, for example, and sitting on cash for 6 months is inefficient, because you're parking all your money in one deal. When if I come to Glenhawk, we can lend, they can lend on three different projects with the same capital that we've got.
Yeah.
So bearing that in mind, you know, we are very much talking about title split today. We're talking about buying multi-unit through whole blocks, splitting them. And as I talk about in all the media channels, is wholesale to retail. We take something big and we break it up. That's how we add value to it.
Yeah.
So we've got first question for you. So what is the benefit of using a bridging lender specifically for title splitting project, and the idea that you can borrow against open market value if you're splitting the title on entry? So what would you say that's the benefit?
So the benefit is probably leverage day one. So what a lot of lenders will look to do in a scenario like that is not necessarily lend against the purchase price, but lend against the open market value. So the aggregate value of each flat valued on its own basis.
Okay.
There's different lenders with slightly different criteria points. So it's always worth having experienced brokers that have got whole of market knowledge. But typically some lenders would look at 85 to 90% of purchase price or 70, 75% of the open market value, whatever's lower. But then there are a few lenders out there that are quite happy to lend against the open market value, maximum LTV, because the borrower's added value. And that's quite an important thing to sort of look at, because although some might look at it as a below market value transaction, there's some that don't, because you've actually added value by splitting the titles. So you if you're buying at $1 million, a multi-unit block, split the titles, it's now worth $2 million. You can get quite a lot more day one for your purchase just by splitting the titles.
And I think that's a good question. That's a great answer, because, you know, people, so adding value, as I talk, when I'm talking to people about title split, there are, for me, there are three specific ways we add value. 33% comes from below market value purchase. So you're buying something and you're making money on the way in. Second part is light refurb. So you're actually making it nicer. And the third part is this disaggregation thing. So straight away, why does it add value when we disaggregate? Is because a first-time buyer can't buy a unit in that block unless you've disaggregated it. And by disaggregation, you're then adding it onto the market for a first-time buyer to buy. So here you guys can actually then lend, and that's why you're probably saying, well, there's an extra value you've added by just disaggregating on entry. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, okay. Exactly that.
Okay, perfect, great. So the key here is finding the right block at the right price. Typically, you cannot usually split on entry if you are buying on a standard buy to let. That's why bridging finance really comes into its own, into our market. So next question. So what are the top three things a buyer should look out for before committing to purchase a block of flats from a finance perspective? Top three things.
I think it's, top three.
There's all right, well, you know, whatever.
There's a lot of things.
Okay,
but
go ahead, tell me.
I think the important thing is research. And when we're looking at bridging finance, you've sometimes got inexperienced borrowers because they're wanting to start their property journey. Or you might be looking at experienced borrowers that are quite used to sort of bridging finance. In any scenario, it's so important to have experience from the likes of yourself, from brokers, from lenders, and learn from their experience. So the top three things really would be to research and know exactly what you're getting into. Have a clear business plan.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it makes sense. Make sure it makes sense for you as a borrower, but also from a lender's perspective. And I think that would probably be the sort of main thing to bear in mind.
I think the research, buying the wrong thing at the wrong price, it just kills the deal straight away, right? And I think also things like, can you speak of retain interest? This is a big question that I don't get. What's the retain interest and service interest in bridging finance? So can you speak to a bit more about what that is?
Yeah, 100%. So again, there's quite a few scenarios we see where maybe a borrower has seen Homes Under the Hammer and they say, you know, I want to get involved in property finance.
Yes, yes, yes.
And they're looking at it from a maybe like a standard mortgage perspective. So 75% loan to value, 25% deposit.
Yes.
With bridging finance, if we're lending 75% day one, we retain the interest up front.
Yeah.
So what that basically means is there's no monthly payments for the borrower. If they're on a 12-month term, they don't pay anything monthly.
Okay.
But the 12 months interest is deducted from your 75% loan to value day one.
So if you're going to borrow £100,000, the borrower thinks they're going to get £100,000, but actually you're going to take the £10,000 for the year of interest out before you lend the money. So they, in effect, get £90,000.
Correct.
Which then, as a consequence, the borrower needs to know that they need to add that extra 10,000 as a deposit.
Exactly.
So the deposit goes up a little bit more.
So again, comes back to the research and finding out exactly how much money you've got to put in a deal. You know, that 25% deposit might turn into a 35% deposit.
Yes.
There's other associated costs with legals and
stamp
planning,
duty.
Stamp duty, correct. Valuation, those sorts of things.
Yes.
But again, there's things that lenders can do, like AVMs, which are free and instant, desktop valuations.
So speak about AVM again. What does AVM mean?
It's a automated valuation system.
So basically nobody physically going out there on day one straight away to say yes or no.
But obviously we're specifically talking about title splitting. Sure. It's sometimes quite hard for that because an AVM is sort of a computer system that takes an average of the area. You really need a valuer going in there to give it the valuation. And that actually works in the borrower's favour because... Yeah. If you do an AVM, it might come in far less than what the actual true market value of that property is.
And I think that's a great point to touch upon about AVM and a surveyor going out, because we, as an investor, as an experienced investor, I always want the surveyors to come out, because bridging finance also allows you to get a valuation on entry and also what the valuer thinks on exit based on the schedule of works that you're going to do. So schedule of works is what kind of works you're going to have done to improve the value of that building. Then as a borrower, you benefit from getting a valuation on entry and get a good sense of what the valuation might be if you do all the works. And then the surveyor says, if you do all that work, we think it's going to be worth this amount more.
Exactly.
And I think that's a really good point.
Exactly that. It's so important because... From a borrower's perspective, that's your equity in the deal. That's your profit in a deal. So that gross development value or the aggregate value of what it will be back end once you finish the works or once you finish the title split.
Yes.
You know, that is such a key piece. That's where you're going to refinance or you're selling. And if it's not as much as you thought it was going to be, that's eating into your profit.
Yeah.
So it's a very important thing to look into.
So we talked about retain. What's service interest and who gets service interest borrowing?
Who gets,
As in, if a retain interest, we talked about basically you pay the interest on entry, so you receive less money from the bridger.
Yep, yep.
And the service interest is basically you pay as you go, right? You're servicing the debt as you go along. So in our case, if you're borrowing £100,000, you get £100,000 of borrowing rather than £90,000 if you were doing a retain.
Yeah.
So who gets it? So my question is, is everybody entitled to get a serviced interest product, or do you have to have a legacy kind of portfolio behind you? You can show that you've got money coming in each month to get a serviced interest product.
Right. Yeah. See what I mean. So exactly that. We don't retain the interest up front, so you get that. There is a 2% arrangement fee, which typically for bridging finance would be deducted from the loan. So you can't add that to the facility like a lot of term lending that you can do.
Yes.
But your 75% loan to value might be like 73, 74. So it's still a lot more. You still get a lot more day one.
Yeah.
You then have to pay monthly. That is available to any borrower, but you have to prove affordability. So what we don't want to do is get into a situation where a borrower is... can't afford the monthly payments.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned earlier, you know, the 1% or even the 0.79% per month interest, it can be quite a lot on a monthly basis.
Yeah, because sometimes people are earning £2,000 and borrowing, the bridging is around £2,000. So how are they going to even afford
to pay that? But we can look at employed income, rental income from other portfolio properties. We sort of, the lovely thing about bridging is you can, it's not necessarily a massive criteria book and just says computer says no. You can work with borrowers, you can try and be clever with certain stuff, make sure it works for the borrower importantly, and then importantly make sure it works for the lender as well. Perfect. As a collective.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think it's got a massive place, especially in title split. I think bridging finance got a really big place to play.
Yeah.
So, next question. What are the main things that cause an application not to progress?
That's a good question. I think it comes back to that research piece where, you know, we have borrowers that come to us that unfortunately just don't know what they're doing and maybe haven't been given good advice because they haven't got the experience from people that they're working with. A massive point is that they can't afford it. You know, when you start looking about this is how much you actually have to put in, it's like, oh, I only thought I had to put in, you know, 90 grand now. I'm having to put in 130 grand. I haven't got that money.
So lack of funds or lack of understanding of how that works is one of the reasons.
Exactly that. And just complete transparency, you know, every lender has different criteria. The amount of times we might see a borrower say, or a broker say, there's no adverse credit for this borrower. And then we get the application and there is adverse credit. So it's all about planning, revising, researching, get a credit check up front. See, sometimes borrowers don't know.
You know, sometimes they've had a mobile phone bill that's been registered and they don't even know about it.
Exactly that. But it's just making sure you've done all you can to make sure it works for you up front. And then it's sort of working in with the lender to make sure it works for not just you, it works for them as well. And if it doesn't work for one lender, there's always another lender. But that's why packaging the deal properly up front is so important.
Makes sense. Thank you. So Quiddity Group has got Quiddity Sourcing recently. We launched this in 2024. So we're now finding below market value blocks and we're then helping our mentees access those. So one of the things that we're finding is people are coming from abroad. So they are British nationals, but they are working abroad, Dubai, Singapore, Hong Kong, whatever it is. Actually, we've had some Hong Kong economic migrants are coming in because of the war and stuff like that. So they've come to do the course. And the question they ask quite a lot is, well, am I allowed to get funding if I am, if I've just, if I've, you know, either if I work in Dubai and buy, but my company is registered in the UK, or I've come from Hong Kong and I don't have much history, am I allowed to get funding from a bridging company?
Yeah, 100%. And again, it's there's multiple different lenders. Probably too many bridging lenders out there. It's a very oversaturated market. There's a lot of good lenders out there, but very different sort of appetites, different criteria. Some lenders won't lend to expats or foreign nationals. Some do.
Does Glenhogue do?
Yeah, we do. Perfect. We do like them to have a UK footprint.
Yeah. Okay.
So what I mean by that is maybe have like a mortgage in the UK already. We wouldn't necessarily, as a whole, we don't like lending to first-time buyers. So we do sometimes see some borrowers that are very asset-rich abroad, but not in the UK. So for someone like that, we'd probably want them to have at least one property in the UK already. But there are some lenders that don't require that. So it's, again, it's speaking to your experienced partners, brokers, mentors, and seeing what's out there, what's whole of market, what is available in the whole of market.
Because I think we're seeing a lot more people now wanting to, you know, come back to the UK and invest in the UK, and I think this is a product that is going to get more and more common as we go forward. Okay, so do you have any tips for buyers to help their case go through as smoothly as possible with a lender? So specifically with Glenhogue, what are the kind of things that, you know, a borrower can really help themselves through their brokers? Hopefully, you know, people like Rich will help them, you know, sell through. But what would you say that they need to, you know, to do to get their application through as painlessly as possible, I guess?
Yeah, because I guess the process for property in England is painful.
Oh my God.
I don't know how we're so property mad. And
so archaic in our process. It's
exactly that. I said that earlier. It's just crazy. But with that in mind, it's a partnership working together is always what I say. You know, lenders need to perform for borrowers. Borrowers need to perform for lenders. And it's that partnership piece that we have some borrowers that sort of think lenders need their business and why are you asking for that? And they just make it difficult.
It's almost
to work
an arrogance of they don't want to share the information.
So like if a lender asks for a schedule of work,
yes,
sometimes we might get borrowers say, well, you don't need that. Why do you need to see that? And it's, you know, that's a standard thing that we'd want to see. It's high risk, high reward for borrowers in property. It's high risk, high reward for lenders. We want to make sure we're protected.
Of course.
By all means, we want to make sure the borrower is protected.
Yes.
So as a partnership, we'll work together. Because again, what I say to a lot of brokers and borrowers alike is that a lot of the work lenders do with your valuations, with getting gross development values, with looking at schedule of works, with looking at your credit history, all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Is benefiting the borrower as well.
Yes.
It's benefiting them on the exit, on a refinance. It's helping them with numbers. If they've got adverse credit, they need to know that. So what's available for me with the refinance?
Yes.
With the valuation and the gross development value again, you know, a borrower should want to know.
To know this.
You know, does it make sense?
Yeah.
Is it achievable?
Yeah.
What are my numbers back end?
Yeah.
So it's that partnership piece that I think is important to work with a lender. And a lender should work with a borrower. And don't get me wrong, there's some lenders that might ask for too much information. And you can always push back a little bit. But work together as a partnership.
Yeah. I think, you know, just to add to this, I think that, you know, it's such a, like, it's almost like having a second set or third set of eye looking at your deal. So I've come to learn that I find a deal, I push it through to my brokers, then we push it through to the bridges. So everybody's looking, different people are looking at the same deal. I'm looking at it for a different thing. You are looking at it from a security perspective.
Yeah.
Rich or brokers are looking at it from a finance perspective. So, and if everybody's almost coalescing against the same, well, yeah, this is going to work, it gives me massive amount of confidence.
Yeah.
But yet people will be thinking, well, you know, I'm borrowing money. I'm going to give you 1%. You know, why are you not giving me the money? It is. And I always say to my mentees, if that was your money, would you not want to do the same due diligence, if not more due diligence on this deal?
Exactly that.
So so I've got one last question for you. So can you share a case study of a title split that went well recently from your kind of perspective?
Yes, we recently completed a deal. I think the purchase price was $600,000, mm-hmm, of a multi-unit block. It was four flats. They created four leases, which were $250,000 each then.
Amazing.
So it was £1 million aggregate value.
Yeah.
So we lent 90% of the purchase price of the $600,000. Mm-hmm. And I think we completed that within 6 weeks from memory.
Okay.
So there was a few potential little issues that came up, but we worked with the borrower, worked with solicitors, overcame those, and we were able to sort of turn it around quite quickly.
Amazing. And the guy then, or the person, got the GDV and exited on 1 million on a long buy-to-let mortgages. Took all of his money out, which is one of the big things that I talk about. You know, if we keep on leaving $100,000 in each deal, we will soon run out of $100,000. So taking all your money out, as I call it, recycle your capital out, is key. So here, this person would have absolutely, well, would have taken more out, 750, they would have taken out and purchased at 100. If they'd done some works on it, they're probably breaking even, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And you guys were part of that deal.
Yep.
Amazing.
And as you say, bring the money out, go again.
Yes.
And start building up the
portfolio
and going from there.
And I can say, you know, just to wrap up, I can say, you know, hand on my heart, I mean, I didn't like bridging 15 years ago. We now work, Credit Property Education, work with three main lenders. Glen Hawk is definitely one of them. And we have had really good experience with certain things don't work. For example, I'll give you an example. Right now, something is not working because a surveyor came out and said they weren't happy with that deal. And it's nothing to do with Glen Hawk, but ultimately, you've got to listen to the surveyor.
Yeah.
And that's also understandable. So it's not always going to be 100% success. And it's just because one deal doesn't work with you guys. We've already put two more deals through the process with you guys now. So it's always a case of, you know, people need to also understand life is not, you know, it's not 100% guaranteed everything's going to work. But when it doesn't work, we at least get to understand why it didn't work and also what can we do for next time. And
you learn, don't you?
Exactly. And I think from our perspective, having you guys like BDMs accessible as well massively makes a difference.
Yeah, 100%.
So for me, thank you so much for taking the time to come and speak to us.
That's all right.
And no doubt, you know, this is going to become a regular thing. There's going to be loads of questions that we will start to collect from other people. And then hopefully we'll see you the next time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.